is to work with all stakeholders, primarily teachers and students, to develop instructional design that utilizes technology in ways that amplify learning in meaningful ways. So that's what I do, and happy to be here and participating on your panel, Ben and Ben.
Thanks. Thank you. Our next guest, as we said before, is Governor Angus King, who helped create the MLTI program. He was the founder of the program and is the reason why we have our laptops and have this conference here today. So, Angus, you want to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Well, good morning. I'm, as you mentioned, I'm in Tel Aviv, Israel, in meetings all day today with education people here who are very interested in what we've done in Maine and with the laptop project. And I'm learning a lot from them. I've seen some amazing things just in the last few hours. So it's pretty cool that you can have people in from as far apart. California and Israel, I think, is almost exactly halfway around the world. So here we are all chatting with you guys up in Orono. So I'm delighted to be with you and look forward to talking.
Thank you. And now Ronald Ho, who is the our product manager from Google. Ronald, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks very much. Can you guys hear me all right there?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, sorry for the blue screen. Trust me, that looks a lot better than I do anyway. yeah, my name is Ronald. I'm the product manager for, I'm one of the product managers in Google Docs, and specifically I'm the product manager for Google Spreadsheets. I heard you gave me credit for creating it, but no, I can't take that credit. That is another brilliant engineer's credit to take there. I am pretty excited about the education space. I mean, I remember back in the day when I was, you know, in school, it was more of, you know, like being a pen pal was literally a pen and having a pal. That was it. And then it was a totally different world. And I remember the first time that I actually had, you know, used the internet for something meaningful in class was like, you know, near the end of my high school years. And next thing I know, my sister is in sixth grade doing a research project and, you know, using the internet. And, you know, I don't even remember when the last time I printed something out was. So, I mean, the world is definitely changing and I'm very, very excited. And I won't even talk about how you guys have laptops and I didn't. Back in school, I only used computers to play Oregon Trail. And I'm actually from the Bay Area myself, so I know exactly where Castalia is, and I actually went to a school very near Castalia. And last thing is, Maine is a very, very exciting place to be right now. I think if I were a student, Maine is one of the top places I would be to be at school. A lot of the Maine schools are, I've been working with some of them through the Google Apps for Education, that we give out, and it's a very, very exciting. It's a very, very exciting thing for us to be able to offer for free for students. And students are getting so much value. Students and teachers are getting so much value from Google Apps for Education when it comes to working together. And we can definitely talk more about what you guys use that for.
We should actually, before we go on, we should mention that Matt is actually a Google certified teacher. So you'd be happy to know that. We'll start the panel discussion, I guess, with Governor King, since he may have to run to a meeting. So the first question we have, we're kind of exploring today in this show 21st century skills and how that works into education and why the laptops are important for that. So our first question was, how or why did the MLTI program form and what was your inspiration or idea behind that?
Well, if I had to put one word to it, Ben, the word would be fear. As the governor of Maine in the 90s and into the 21st century, I looked out into the future and couldn't really figure out what our people were going to do for a living. I was very worried about the future because I couldn't predict where the jobs were going to be. But in thinking through, it occurred to me that we don't really know what the jobs will be 10 or 20 years from now, but we do know that they will involve more education and more familiarity with technology. And so that was the sort of core thinking that began the process, ended up with the MLTI program. It was really, in a sense, an economic development project in trying to prepare our people for the 21st century. The precipitating factor was a surplus, which, if you're unfamiliar with that term, it means more money than you thought. That term has not been used much in the last 10 years or so because budgets have been so tight. We had a significant surplus at the end of the 90s, and I wanted to use it for something that would really make a meaningful difference, not for just a few extra miles of highway or, you know, fix a roof or something, but really change things in the future of Maine, and the laptop project is what came out.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for creating this. I think, as you kind of spoke about training for the 21st century skills, one of the quotes that we live by at our high school, that our laptop program that we really strive to achieve, is training students for jobs that don't exist yet. And so we're trying to, you know, Ms. Barr and the other teachers across the state are all trying to give us the skills that we need to have jobs that don't exist yet. And I think, you know, this MLTI program makes that happen.
Well, that was the whole idea. Instead of learning content, we have to learn learning.
Exactly. Learn how you learn.
And yep. I guess the next question that I wanted to ask was, with the continuation of the MLTI program, I know that it just got extended to high schools, but is there anything else, like what can you perceive as being next?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that question, because that's the subject of a lot of the meetings that I'm in over here in Israel. The question is, if all the kids and teachers have the devices, how do you maximize the power, both in terms of individual learning, but in diagnosis? For example, I saw a program this morning where all the kids take do their math homework, and the next morning the teacher comes in and there's a bar graph of how each student is doing, and the teacher can immediately see who needs help in multiplication, or, you know, is the class getting multiplication but struggling with division, and therefore you direct teaching in that direction. It's a very powerful diagnostic tool that I think is kind of a next step. And of course, the first next step at Maine is to finish going into all the high schools. As you know, maybe 40% of our high schools are now one-to-one, but we really want to make it 100%. So I think that's the next immediate step. But then the step beyond that is, how do we harness the power to really take advantage of the tools that the computers give us in terms of data and seeing who's doing what and how they're doing? And, you know, now you take a test and 2 weeks later you get it back and you may or may not learn anything from that experience because you've already moved on. You get an instant feedback. That's how you can really learn from a test, and it's an educational process instead of simply an assessment.
That example of the math homework and the teacher knowing right away how many kids struggled with the math homework, whether they thought it was easy, whether they, you know, what they confused with, that's a great example of some instant feedback and how that everyone being on the same laptop and computer system could be worked.
If you think about it, it also increases the efficiency of education because the teacher knows what to concentrate his or her time on instead of wasting time on something that everybody gets.
Yes, absolutely. We have a big group coming in now. Just say hello to them. Hello, everybody. We have Governor King on right now, along with a couple of other presenters, but we have one last question for Governor King. If you guys want to just sit in the middle section here, that'd be great. We have a whole group of about 20, 30 kids coming in right now, so we're just going to let them take their seat. And Governor King, thank you very much for your time. We have one more question for you. If you were governor now, what would your next step be to continue the program? Like, what would the next bill that you'd want to pass be?
Well, I think it would be to complete to get the project into all the high schools. And at the same time, I would want to focus a lot of attention on professional development. What we've learned at Maine and around the world is that this program is not a hardware project. It's not, I mean, the laptops are the necessary condition, but not the sufficient condition. They're not enough. It's how the teachers are trained to integrate the technology, and also the leadership in the school that I think is so important. So I think the next two steps are A, finish the project in terms of the high schools, and B, really continue the emphasis and expand, if possible, the emphasis on professional development, because the tools are only as good as the people who are using them. And what we've learned is that if they're really into the devices and know how to get the most out of them, it makes a huge difference in the teaching and learning in the classroom.
That's a really great idea, and I think we've seen the same thing at our high school, and I think that's definitely something that we agree and would like to see continue. So thank you very much.
Just quickly before, I know you might have to leave towards the end, if we could just ask you an audience question now. It's quick. Did you have any role, or were you involved in the decision of using Apple computers for the Main Learning Technology Initiative?
Yeah, I can give you the history of that. When the project was first authorized by the legislature, no particular device was specified, and put out called an RFP, which is a request for proposals, basically to the whole world, and got four or five, can't remember exactly, essentially bids back, one of which was from Apple. There was a committee formed, which I was not a member, which evaluated the bids and concluded that Apple's proposal was the best in terms of the value of, you know, how much what we got for the money, and that's how Apple happened to get it. It was a competitive bid, and they won. And then I think the second round they did the same, went through the same process. And I have to say one of the pieces of success of our project in Maine is because Apple was more than just a vendor. They were really a partner, and have been a partner, because a project of this size, we're now up, I think, 70,000 laptops and networks, 200 schools and all those kinds of things. There are going to be a lot of unexpected bumps, obstacles in the road. Really, somebody, say a partner, not just somebody that's selling a device. So the partnership has worked out quite well. That's how it happened. I have to tell you, back at the time that decision was made, I and others took a lot of flack. People said, you know, it ought to be Microsoft. Well, Apple won is the short answer. So they've, you know, that's how this project happened to be iBook, MacBook, project.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I didn't realize that it was just a flat out competition between the two. I think that's interesting. I didn't know that. But
we'll move on the same subject of 21st century skills to Ronald now in New York.
Thank you very much, Governor King. But
okay, I'm going to have to, unfortunately, I have to leave because I literally left in the middle of a meeting, and so I'm going to go back to be meeting with a group of Israeli educators. But thanks a lot for giving me this opportunity, and have a great show.
All right, we appreciate it so much. Thank you.
So, Ronald, if you could just, keeping on the subject of 21st century skills, if you could talk a little bit about Google and how Google influences this realm of kind of 21st century education.
No, I'd be glad to. Yeah, I think 21st century education, like I said, is changing so rapidly, and it's moving toward a place where I think, you know, education is totally different right now. It's not the same as like education before, even like 5 or 6 years, just 5 or 6 years ago, was a student going to the classroom and getting information from the teachers. And I think it's so much more than that. Everybody is teaching everybody else's class right now. Every time you're working with somebody else on a group project, you guys are teaching each other. Students are teaching teachers, teachers are teaching students, and you know, students get to work with others, like, you know, 3,000 miles away, across cultural boundaries, across country boundaries. It's a very, very exciting place to be, and I think it's where Google really fits into that is providing the tools for you to do that. And I say Google, and I also mean any other any other technology company out there, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's, you know, even Twitter, for example. Every time you're blogging something, every time you're tweeting something, you're teaching us all something. So remember that next time you tweet about how hungry you are. That's really, I think, the best way to go. And people, I think, always ask me, kind of, you know, what are the skills? You know, people nebulously talk about 21st century skills. I think it really comes down to four different things. Like, what does it mean to be, you know, education in 21st century? I think it comes down to understanding how to search for information, understanding how to process that information, and then from there, creating information and sharing information. Let me try and explain those really quickly. When I say search for information, like I said, barely 10, 20 years ago, all the information you wanted were in libraries. They were in kind of siloed networks that were not connected. And then the internet came along, and it was all about searching for that information. You know, you had search engines that tried to search for it. You wanted to learn about more things, you would search about it. Then information, there's so much information that all of a sudden processing that information was hard. So you're trying to depend on authoritative websites to process the information and understand what you're looking for. Once that came about, a few years later, things became so much easier for students or anyone else to go out and create information. Whether that's starting a website, whether that's putting together a blog, whether that's, you know, coming up with the next greatest widget or gadget, like, you're all creating information and building things. And then on top of that, the next big step is working together to do that, because there's only so much you can do as an individual, but working together in teams, it's, you know, and working together with others, leveraging their experiences and sharing what you have and building upon each other's, like, work. That's where the things start becoming very, very interesting. And I think at Google, our goal is to facilitate and provide the tools and the platform for all of these things at once. For example, we have a search engine that allows you to search for stuff, of course. But even something as simple as spreadsheets, just something near and dear to my heart, something as simple as that can allows you to work together to, you know, organize that information. If you guys are using it to track projects, for example, teachers will take it a next step further and provide quizzes in Google spreadsheets and grade them really quickly. And we even have a very exciting thing where a nonprofit out there is using Google spreadsheets as an e-commerce platform. They're using a gadget that they put on top of a spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet just lists exactly what I want to sell, how much it costs, and how much I have left. And all of a sudden, folks in India who have access to a computer once a week can still provide and they have no computer skills at all, but they can still have an e-commerce like website for them to sell their products really easily. All they have to do is list out what they have and how much it costs, and how much they have left, and everything just happens automatically. So I mean, things like that are really, really exciting.
That's great. And as far as what you spoke about sharing the information, all coming up with ways to share the information and collaborate on it, I just wanted to point out for also to the audience and to you, for this show that we put on, we made a Google map that highlighted where our guests are, that put the push pins down on all locations of all the guests. We used our Google website, the Google site, as the homepage for our show, and we have the panel webpage where we highlighted the blurbs that you sent us and the pictures. We have an outline of our show up there on the Google Doc. We have our questions for the panel all set up on a Google Doc, and then we're also using another Google Doc for the audience to submit their questions. So Google really provides us with such an organized and easy way to share all the information that is being made available to us in the 21st century. So,
I'm glad that you guys
provide an example to you of how, I mean, how that's all working. You know, the Google spreadsheet has been so handy as far as making forms and getting survey data and organizing all that. I think we use that almost weekly. We have a new survey or a new form that's being made.
And if we can move over to Matt for a minute, and also talking about that essential question of why 21st century skills are important to students, can you comment a little from a teacher's perspective, someone who's actually in the classroom?
Sure, absolutely. And I think Ron was right on with with the kinds of skills that we're developing in schools or trying to develop anyway. But as far as to add on to that, I see kind of four other areas that I think schools need to be focusing on. And I think technology is a big part of it, but it's not the only part of it. Number one, I think creating empathetic human beings is one of the most important things that schools can do. And I'll relate that to take the current situation going on in the Gulf right now with the oil spill and how empathy, the ability to walk in another person's shoes, could positively impact decisions that are made or were made even before the whole oil spill incident happened. And of course, now that the disaster is going on, how might empathy impact how we handle that situation? So empathy, I think, is huge. I think technology can help us develop empathy in people at a much younger age. So Ronald talked about connecting with other people around the world. Think about that. That's going to raise cultural awareness and cultural intelligence in youth at a much earlier age than it's ever done. It's kind of like we know that when people travel around the world, that they gain a better understanding of the world. They're more likely to engage with issues around the world. And I think the internet can do some of those kinds of things at an earlier age and help us develop empathy at an earlier age. I also think ethics is huge. And again, I'll relate ethics to the oil spill. And I think technology can help us foster ethics in youth and people of all ages, quite honestly. But if people who made decisions about deep sea drilling and oil mining operations had a certain ethical underpinning that I don't think exists, and I don't see it right now, might we have a different scenario? Might we have a different energy mix going on? Might we have less reliance on fossil fuels and a greater investment in renewables, for example? So that's ethics. Another area that I think schools need to be working on is teaching entrepreneurship. I think schools need to prepare, and Governor King talked about this earlier, need to prepare youth for a very uncertain future. And we know this uncertain future will involve problems, big problems, big challenges that will require collaboration on a scale like we've never seen before and will require novel approaches to solving these problems. And being in the Silicon Valley, and Ronald grew up out here, so he kind of, you know, he knows what the spirit is like out here. I think there are wonderful lessons from the whole process of entrepreneurship that schools could really benefit from as far as instructional design in the classroom. So a big part of entrepreneurship is taking risks. And that's something that we don't do in schools very well. We tend to have a very kind of measured curriculum. We have so a given class might have 10 units over the course of the year. There's a beginning, middle, and end to each unit. There's a certain body of knowledge that is assessed at the end in the form of a test. But entrepreneurship is a very different process. It's very, instead of ready, aim, fire, it's fire, ready, aim. I mean, it totally mixes things up. So I think that's an area where schools can really work on and improve. And then finally, I just want to say, schools really need to, the interesting questions and the interesting problems don't have clear-cut answers. So what does that mean? It means we all, everybody in a school community, teachers like myself, students like Ben and Ben, and administrators and parents, we all need to, if we're going to really tackle interesting problems and questions in our classroom, we need to get comfortable with this notion of ambiguity. And we need to become comfortable with extending ambiguity. Because when we extend ambiguity and we don't rush to I think there's this inclination in schools to rush to the right answer and produce the right answer and produce some sort of product. But I think innovation happens in that when we extend ambiguity and we allow different kinds of multiple perspectives and different kinds of solutions to pop up because we've allowed more ambiguity into our cultures and that sort of thing. So those are kind of the four kind of things that I think schools need to be focusing on. The bad news is I really don't see that right now. By and large, I see schools still, Ronald mentioned that Google does several things, one of which is search. And I think most schools kind of see the internet as the library in the sky still, and as a place to get information during the school day. Now, of course, our youth go home and they're publishing and producing and creating content, you know, what outside of school, of course that happens, but I think schools need to start viewing the internet as not only a place to get information, but as a place to produce information, share information, reflect, document our learning, and those kinds of things. The good news is that we have the tools and platforms, and there's research out there supporting instructional design that is more participatory in nature. It's just what I think is probably more challenging and difficult is changing the mindset of people in schools to allow a flatter instructional design and a more participatory instructional design to flourish in our classroom environments. And I don't want to leave it with bad news, and I don't want to talk too much here, but I can come back around and share some examples of some positive things that I've seen in our school culture and community, and of course, the work that Ben and Ben's doing and other projects from around the world.
We just have about 5 minutes left, but before we wrap up, could you just quickly talk a little bit how something like a student webcast, something like Ben and Ben or the Gayer Radio Project is positively kind of fulfilling this quest?
Yeah, I will, real quick. So we, first of all, the kind of project that Ben and Ben, I would love to see more of these kinds of things happening in schools. And I think we will, just like the barriers to entry for news organizations have become basically minimal. So we've seen all sorts of new news media outlets like TechCrunch and Mashable and all of these other organizations that never existed before because the cost to make news now is so minimal. We're starting to see all of these different kinds of way organizations that report news. Well, I think we're going to start, well, we are seeing that right now. We're starting to see youth as social entrepreneurs and using tools like Skype and Facebook and Google tools and blending and mashing these tools up to do really interesting things, particularly in the area of the social realm, which I think is really exciting. I think that's only going to continue. And so a youth webcasting program like Ben and Ben or like something similar that we do at our school gives youth the opportunity to communicate with people from around the world. Ben and Ben, I know you've talked to all sorts of interesting people. My students on our radio show last year, a quick story here, when the wildfires in Victoria, Australia happened in the Northern Hemisphere spring of 2009, our students from California did a live radio broadcast where we talked to students and teachers at a school who were in Victoria and who were affected by those wildfires. Well, in the course of that interview, we realized, well, gee, here in California, we're affected by seasonal wildfire and wildfire that's caused at least in part to climatic change. We're affected by that too. So it was a wonderful kind of empathetic moment and exchange and cultural exchange. We could have watched YouTube videos, we could have read the news, but to have that actual human connection to talk to people live in that space, I can't help but think that that's going to build empathy at an earlier age and in ways that we've never been able to do before. And I think that's only going to help us in the future when these youth go out there and they work for an energy company. I think they're going to have a different frame of reference when they're leading and they're making decisions. And I'm very heartened and inspired by that at the same time.
Thank you very much, Matt. Ronald, we have one last question for you before we're going to turn over to a bunch of questions from our guests. But Ronald, last question. How do you see this generation impacting the fields of technology, social media, and business networks?
I think that's a great question. I think this generation can affect much more than just those three industries. And I think that what we're really all about, and I think Matt summed it up with one word very, very well, is entrepreneurship. This is really all about going out there and taking life by the reins and just really going for it. Whatever you guys want to do. And I think what the internet, I think what technology has done and what a lot of the companies out there, including Google, for example, has really done is provide a platform for anyone who wants to affect change to affect a large audience. Like MIT Business School a few weeks ago, just visiting some friends, and I went there, and it was their annual conference for business plan competition, where folks were pitching new ideas and crazy new businesses, and I was surprised at how many of them were really affecting, like the business they were proposing were not anywhere near where they lived or where they worked. They were just across the world. A lot of them were solving problems in Africa, solving problems in India, and that is a very, very exciting thing. So I think the internet, I think the technology, I think the platforms itself allows you to do two things. It allows you to, one, work with other people to affect even more people, like have a very large positive impact for a wider audience. And the other thing is it allows you to take on big problems. Whatever those problems are, you can take on those problems and use what you have and see what others have done, work with them, build on top of what they've done to really kind of make a difference in the world in whatever field you want. And I think, Matt touched upon energy, he touched upon education. The world is entirely up to you guys here. And it's all about, again, it's all about finding that information, creating some of your own information, and working with others.
Thank you very much, Ronald. So that's all the time we have for our panel discussions. I can't thank you guys enough for taking time out of your busy days. And Matt woke up at 5:30 this morning because he's out in California. So when we started at 9:30, it's only 5:30 at his time, so he got up. Governor King took time out of a meeting with the education ministers in Israel to come to us. Ronald Ho is taking time out of his busy schedule in New York at Google headquarters to come talk with us. So we can't thank you guys enough. You guys shared so much new information and cutting edge stuff and what your guys' view on technology is being at the forefront of the field. So thank you very much for sharing everything with us. And Ben, do you have any other last comments?
Well, just because we are recording, the show will be online. We'll just do our regular thank you to EdTech Talk and the World Bridges Network, and also to all the folks at MLTI and UMO for giving us this beautiful facility to work out of today. So we're going to let you guys go while we spend the last 10 or 15 minutes doing some teaching.
Boom. Thank you very much for this. This is incredibly awesome. I wish I had the opportunity to do such of these things, too.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. So wow. Mrs. Barr is going to take just a few minutes and walk you through kind of everything she's been doing. And as you can see, we back channel a lot. We multitask. Obviously, we don't usually have a live audience here in front of us. So we're kind of doing a lot of things all at the same time. So she's going to talk a little bit about what's on her screen.
Well, first off, what did you guys think? Did you guys enjoy that? Do you guys understand a lot of what they